Optimize your grad school application, grades, scores, essays, resume, activity history, and more. And by the way, why are there so many moving parts in a grad school application? Welcome to the 247th episode of Admissions Straight Talk, Accepted's podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you show that you both fit in at your target schools and are stand out in the applicant pool. The result? You get a message one day that causes you to jump up and down shouting, "Yes, I'm in!" And not only in, but in at the best program for you. This episode is brought to you by Accepted's free guide, Fitting In and Standing Out, The Paradox at the Heart of Admissions. Remember, I just was talking about that paradox. It's really simple. When you master this paradox, when you dominate it, you will get in. To learn how to do exactly that, download the free guide from accepted.com/FISO, as in Fit In, Stand Out. Again, that's accepted.com/FISO to download Fitting In and Standing Out, The Paradox at the Heart of Admissions. We'll also link to it from our show notes at accepted.com/247. This show was triggered by a question asked on a recent webinar that I gave when a member of the audience, Glenn, asked, "Are there any podcasts or resources that focus specifically on rounding out the application, recommendations, extracurriculars, etc.?" There isn't, and I decided to create one, and this is it. We're going to discuss different elements, some of the ones that Glenn didn't ask about, as well as some that he did, why they are important in graduate admissions, and what you can do to make sure you provide admissions committees what they want with each of these elements. All right, let's get started. First, for some of the more obvious stuff, graduate admissions committees, especially for competitive programs, want to see good grades. Exactly how good? Well, that you can look at in terms of the class profile for admitted students. That'll give you a good idea of the average, is obviously a good indication of what they like to see. Above average is great. Below average, well, it depends how low it goes and what else you have to show. Why are these important? Because past performance predicts future performance. This is a fundamental of admissions, a fundamental premise of admissions. And the schools want to know that you have the ability and the self-discipline to apply yourself in a demanding academic environment, your ability to excel. So if you feel that you want to go to a top program and you have the grades that indicated you thrived in whatever academic environment you've been in the past, whether it's at a highly competitive school or perhaps a less competitive school, then you are providing evidence that you can thrive in a demanding academic environment, especially if it was a difficult program. If your grades don't provide that confidence, then either you need to provide context for why your grades don't accurately indicate your ability, or you need to take classes now, get A's now, and show that now you have both the discipline and the raw intelligence to perform. I go into much more detail on this in the podcast number 137, and that you can download from accepted.com/137, 5 A's for your low GPA. But again, the basic premise here is that past performance predicts future performance, and schools, whatever the graduate program, wants to know that you will thrive in their program academically and that you can simply handle the work. So that's grades. What about test scores? Well, if you have the good grades, why do you need a test score? After all, that shows your performance over a long period of time. Well, test scores, whether it's the GRE, the GMAT, the LSAT, or the MCAT, or whatever alphabet soup your particular program demands, test scores provide a common standard that all applicants have to take. They're demanding, almost all of them. But they do provide that common standard where grading standards can vary enormously. You have some schools that are simply less demanding because the entrance requirements are much lower. You have other schools that have tremendous grade inflation, even if the entrance requirements are very high. The test score, it's common for everybody. Now, it doesn't show one's ability to apply oneself in a demanding academic environment. It doesn't show that long-term self-discipline, if you will. But it is, those tests are highly predictive of success in specific graduate programs. And this is true really of all the standardized tests. That's their purpose. In addition, they have some secondary purposes. If they're published, then they tend to impress alumni, applicants, recruiters, and also U.S. News. So they are frequently factors in U.S. News rankings. And because of this these non-official functions take on probably outsized importance or importance that were never intended to take. But that's one of the reasons that they are important. The basic one, they're predictive of success. They provide a common standards. Those are the basic reasons. And then the other elements that I just mentioned. What about the essays, the personal statement for some programs, like law school and medical school, statements of purpose, or the application essays for business school, statement of purpose for engineering, and many other programs? Primary purpose of the essays is threefold. And you can think about it in terms of the acronym PAD, P-A-D, not padding, but PAD. The first one is provide a window into the real you. They want to meet you. They want to know that you're going to fit in their program, that there's not going to be a jerk factor if they admit you, that you're going to work well, and that you share their values, and that you believe in their mission, if they have a mission. So they're looking to meet you through your essay. That's number one. That's the P, provide a window into the real you. The A, add value to the other elements of the application. The other elements, the resume, the test score, the grades, the transcript, perhaps an activity history or work history, depending upon the program you're applying to, recommendations. These are all parts of the puzzle that they're putting together in this application to get a picture of you, an image of you. But the personal statement is supposed to introduce you as a human being, and again, provide a window into the real you. But my point here is you don't want to just duplicate what's in other parts of the application. So if you talk about a particular achievement, let's say in your resume, that's great. But that bullet point, or even if it's a two bullet points, or even if you give, 50 words in a box somewhere, that can't talk about all the challenges you face in achieving that achievement, whatever it was. All right. It will hopefully talk about your impact, that bullet point, but it can't talk about the challenges, maybe the interpersonal difficulties that you faced or the communications difficulties. If you're applying to a technical program, yes, you can talk about technical difficulties, but for many, many graduate programs, that would include medicine, law, MBA, the more professional programs, I would avoid the technical problems and focus much more on interpersonal and leadership teamwork kinds of challenges there, because that will really add value to your application and help them get that window. And then D stands for demonstrate your communications ability. Now, schools are more and more, especially in the business arena, asking for videos. I think that's going to become more and more common. But for most graduate programs, writing is the only way they see how you can communicate until they invite you to interview. Then obviously they see more of it. But until they do so, your writing, your statement of purpose, or whatever short form answers you provide, those are the demonstrations of your communications ability and specifically your writing ability. So you want it to be clear. That's paramount. You want it to be well written. You want it to be correct. You don't want it to be full of sloppy, silly errors. That's really, really important, because otherwise they'll know that your writing tends to be full of sloppy errors, and you don't want to make that impression. The other purpose of the essays and the written portions of the application are for you to show fit with the school or the specific program you're applying to. Programs have different flavors. They may be similar on some level, but there's going to be nuances, whether it's medical school or law school or engineering programs or PsyD programs. They all have specific nuances and strengths and weaknesses. And the personal statement or statement of purpose or essays or even the short form questions can be great places for you to demonstrate fit with that school's strength and culture. So those are the other elements that you want to keep in mind for the essays. What about the resume or CV? Well, the resume or CV provides a summary of your career or your work to date, and a snapshot of your career progression if you've been out of school for a few years. And that's absolutely critical for MBAs or for any post-experience kind of program. For medical school, they're going to want to look at your CV, whether you've been, you know, taking a gap year or trying to go to medical school straight from college, and they're going to want to see clinical exposure and teamwork. Research is nice, but necessarily mandatory. If you are a non-traditional applicant applying to medical school, you should try to highlight aspects of your career that are particularly relevant for medicine. And indeed, if you're a career changer anywhere, you're going to want to do this. So for example, if you're a computer developer, you presumably have learned how to think very logically and do troubleshooting and diagnosis of problems in computer programming. You can use those skills and transfer them to medicine and diagnosing people who are sick. If you are a teacher and you want to become a doctor, then again, you can explain complex concepts to students, and you can transfer that ability to explaining complex concepts to patients. The same logic or the same process is what you need to go through if you are a non-traditional applicant to whatever graduate program you are applying to. And again, the essays and the written portions of the application or your interviews, if you're invited to interview, are great places for you to make the connection between what you've done in the past. The relationship between it and what you want to do is not obvious. If it is obvious, obviously, then you don't have to worry about that. For academic research programs, you know, your PhDs, etc., research is just mandatory because academicians do research. That's part of their job. And in almost any field, whether it's medicine or business or law or academics, schools want to see that you have a realistic expectation of what the work you're going to need to do in the program and beyond the program involves. This is a good thing. It's really a safety mechanism. It's to protect you from investing tens of thousands of dollars and years of your life pursuing a career that you really know nothing about. In other words, to protect you from making a mistake. So if you are interested in a career that requires research, then yes, research experience is really important, in the same way that clinical experience is important if you want to go into clinical medicine, if you want to go into business. Something relating to business is important to have on your resume or in your experience. And this goes on and on down the line. The basic idea here is that your resume and past experience should show affinity for your chosen career and field of study. And the admissions committee should be able to look at what you've done in the past, combine it with the education they are going to provide you, and see that the combination will help you achieve your professional goals. That's what they're looking for. All right, so we've kind of covered those ideas. Letters of recommendation. Almost all graduate programs require them, usually two, some one, some occasionally three, some medical schools sometimes more. The point here is that the school you are applying to or the program you're applying to gets a third party's opinion on your candidacy. They'll review and they'll have their own opinion. You obviously have your own opinion. This third party, though, perspective is what they're looking for. And that can sometimes be problematic, especially if your recommender turns to you and say, you know, I really want to help you, but I'm swamped. Can you please write this for me and I'll sign it? That's a real problem because it means that the schools aren't getting anything of value out of a letter of recommendation. They can frequently tell from the writing style that it's been written by the applicant. And obviously, there's not going to be any new information or new perspective in the letter of recommendation. So what I recommend you do is hopefully your recommender won't ask you to write it. For business school, that's a real no-no. I think for academic programs, it's more common. What I would suggest you do when you ask a recommender to write a letter of recommendation for you is 6 to 8 weeks before you want it to be written, you present them with a summary, 1 to 2 page summary of things that you have done that they should be aware of, but perhaps have forgotten, that were impressive, that you're proud of, and that will make their life easier. They don't need, you know, you could give them a resume, but I don't think that's really what they need. They need this summary. And they may also need some information about what are the values of your particular program, because not every recommender will know everything about all the schools you're applying to. So again, keep it very brief. They do not want to read a book. Let them know what the school is looking for and also highlight for them the achievements that you have had under their tutelage or leadership or while they were supervising you. Again, let's move on. What about community service, also known as extracurriculars? Why? What role do they play in graduate admissions? This isn't college admissions. You're not a high school kid anymore. Well, extracurriculars can provide a lot of different things to graduate schools. For medicine, they show a commitment to service, period. And that's something that medical schools really value because the essence of medicine is service. So they want to see commitment to service. For business applicants, business schools, believe it or not, do want to admit people who have an inclination to serve. But they also know that leadership is sometimes hard to attain when you're 1 or 2 years out of college and in a business, in a company or corporation. And business schools value leadership. They want to see leadership potential. So the place to get it might be in a volunteer role. And again, volunteer commitments, community service can provide you with a great place to show organizational and people skills, the very skills that business schools most value. And you may not be able to show them as well on the job. For all areas, community service can provide a way for you to show affinity for the field you're entering. For example, if you're applying to law school and you worked in a legal clinic, you volunteered. Great experience, great exposure to the law. Or you're an accountant and you worked in a tax accounting clinic, perhaps in tax prep. That would, of course, not be volunteering, but or not necessarily volunteering. But again, it would show affinity. It would show that you have an idea of what you're getting into, in addition to showing the personal, the interpersonal and the leadership experiences that I mentioned. For all areas, community service provides you with a multidimensionality that enriches the educational environment and complements expertise in your area of study. So, for example, if you are applying to medical school and you did community service at Habitat for Humanity, which has nothing directly to do with clinical medicine, that's fine. You worked in the soup kitchen. Well, there is something. You probably will work with underserved populations at some point in your medical career, if that's not your intention long term. And the fact that you had that work experience in the soup kitchen will help you when you're a doctor. And it will also, again, show that you know what you're getting into by working with different populations. For business, again, it shows commitment to the community. It shows that you're not just, I don't know, working for Goldman Sachs and buried in an investment bank or in a management consulting firm working with elites. You care about society. You have outreach to society. If your intentions are in marketing, obviously you're going to be marketing to many different populations. So your experience, whether it's in a soup kitchen or in Habitat for Humanity, will enrich the classroom environment. And this would be true whether you're applying for the two specialties I mentioned, or a JD, or a master's in engineering, or a PsyD, or an academic degree. What if you don't have community service? Let's say you're out of college a few years and you haven't been doing it. I would say start. Start as soon as possible. You hope to get accepted this next application cycle, and then maybe you'd only have a few months of community service, but that might not happen. And you might have to reapply. And suddenly your few months becomes a year and a half or 2 years, and the experience becomes richer as the commitment becomes stronger. So don't wait with it. What about, and I probably should have put this up right when I discussed the statement of purpose, what about addenda and optional essays? Addenda are more common in a law school application. Optional essays are more common in business school and secondary applications for medical school. These are frequently used to address gaps or weaknesses like a dip in grades one semester or a gap in employment. And I would advise you to take advantage of these. Some of the optional essays also allow you not just to explain quote-unquote weaknesses or provide context for that dip in grades, but to just add something that you'd like the admissions committee to know. If you have that kind of open-ended optional essay or addenda, then by all means use it, provided you have something worthwhile to add. And most people will. Don't go for the grand finale. Don't go for the grand summary. But an experience that helps you show fit would be a great way to use an optional essay. If you have something to explain, that gap in employment, dip in grades, then I would suggest, again, that you use the optional essay. And I'll refer you again to accept.com/137 5As for your low GPA in terms of what to put into the optional essay and how to show the schools that what happened, happened, and it's not going to happen again. What about the videos that are becoming increasingly common on, specifically on MBA applications? And my feeling is that they're going to become increasingly common on other graduate applications also. They're there because schools want to assess your presence and your poise before issuing an interview invitation. It's much less expensive to watch a 1 minute or even 3 minute video than to invite you for an interview, which is very expensive for you and takes a half hour of somebody's time at the school. So the video is there to show, again, presence and poise and your ability to think on your feet. For business schools, it also is a way for the school to see how you will present yourself to recruiters, because recruiters are in business school, or business recruiters are increasingly using videos as a screening tool. Now, the schools know that they can coach you and they can improve your skills somewhat, but there has to be something there to begin with. Now, I've hit the highlights of most applications. If there are other elements of the application that you would like me to address that I haven't addressed here, or you have questions on this content, please ask your questions in the comments at accepted.com/247. And I hope now you see that your graduate school application is like a jigsaw puzzle where all pieces should interlock and, when assembled, present an impressive picture of you. Each element has a role to play, a piece to add to the puzzle. That is you, as far as the admissions committee is concerned. And Glenn, wherever you are, I hope I've answered your question. For the rest of you listeners, thank you too for joining me for this Admissions Straight Talks 247th episode. If you find the show worthwhile, please tell the world. Leave a review. There are links to multiple podcatchers where you can leave that review at accepted.com/247. Thanks again for coming. This is Admissions Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.